September 19th. I was in the Boston newsroom that afternoon, far from my home in Mexico City, my family, my one-year-old son. I watched footage of collapsed buildings. I couldn't believe it. The quake struck 32 years to the day since the massive 1985 quake here.
8.1 earthquake hits a population of 15 million.
That time, at least 10,000 people died. Fewer people died this time, 369 people confirmed dead. Fewer buildings collapsed. Some say it's because this quake was weaker, that building codes had improved, or that it was just plain luck. When I got home to Mexico City, I saw our community ripped apart. It's what natural disasters do. People were evacuating, moving, in my building too.
Everyone is moving pretty rapidly because this building is on the high risk list, which means get what you want quickly out of here and get out.
Walls had fallen. There were holes and big cracks floor to ceiling. An elderly woman walked down the stairs and prayed, carrying a box of photographs, weeping. One family, close friends of ours, is leaving the city altogether. They lost their home and jobs in the quake and had to find work elsewhere. Gabby Luan, the mom, tells me she could never live in this building again.
No podemos estar aquí. A componer el edificio, a remodelarlo y todo, para ellos todo va a seguir.
The memories of the quake, this building, are too disturbing.
Y ella empezó a gritar que mi mamá, mi mamá.
She says, my daughter was screaming, mom, mom. It's etched in my mind forever, she says. We say goodbye, and my family goes to stay with friends who offered their homes. Disasters split communities, but can strengthen them too. A week later, though, I see what happens after a disaster like this, when people worry about which buildings are safe, which should be demolished. And here's where things get tricky. Instead of having city inspectors, Mexico City outsources inspections to private engineers. They decide on repairs, whether a building is safe, not the city. Also, the engineers are paid by building owners or developers. I see this process up close in our own building. A private engineer, Jose Gongora, was hired to inspect the building. A group of people who own apartments here follow him, and it becomes clear how interests can clash. The inspector says the building isn't bad. He's not worried. It'll need plenty of repairs, new walls, but it'll be fine. One apartment owner has doubts, though. She mentions that an architect told her the building was tilting, that the building next door slams into ours during quakes. Another engineer who'd come by said a column was badly damaged, and that worried her.
Nosotros vivimos aquí, entonces tenemos que asegurarnos. O sea, porque nuestra vida corre peligro.
The apartment owner says, we live here. We have to make sure this building will be okay. She tries asking more questions, but other apartment owners who don't live in the building themselves cut her off. They ask the inspector to wrap it up, declare the building safe. This back and forth between building owners, private engineers, competing interests, some say it's a flawed, dangerous process, that the government isn't taking public safety seriously.
The reality is that the city plays no role. The city has abandoned its role, and I think that's a mistake.
Mario Ordaz is an earthquake engineering expert at the National University of Mexico.
Determining whether a building should be demolished or not should not be left to the opinion of private citizens.
Do you think that there will be buildings left alone and people will go back and live in these buildings that you think should actually be demolished?
Definitely. That's going to happen.
I asked him about my building. Would he have lived in it? It was built in the 70s, and everyone said, hey, it survived the big 85 quake, so it's solid. Professor Ordaz shakes his head.
So you wouldn't have lived in the building I lived in?
No, I wouldn't.
I made a mistake.
I think so, but I mean, this is a problem. What means did you have to know that? You trusted the government. You trusted the fact that if that building was there for rent, you assumed that it was suitable for that.
Ordaz also worries that without earthquake retrofitting, which isn't required in Mexico, these buildings, like mine, may collapse in another similar quake. City and federal officials would not grant interviews to talk about these safety concerns, despite repeated requests. These worries become very real when I follow a civil engineer, Araceli Arenas, to inspect other buildings. She's part of a brigade of volunteer engineers going through the city post-quake. At one point, we go into a building and see something disturbing. An extra floor of apartments being built on top of an old building. There's a rush to build in this neighborhood. It's gentrified. People will pay high rents. Arenas questions the architect, asks for his license, permit. She says the construction looks shabby, not something that seems authorized. So, this person is not happy that we're here. He tries to block her way, but eventually lets her in. After, Arenas tells me how dangerous illegal construction can be. She says how that extra floor could cause the whole building to collapse in the next quake. After this quake, investigations are making this horribly clear. Investigations of building violations are now happening throughout Mexico City and other areas hit by recent quakes. There's a probe into construction irregularities involving a school that crashed, killing 26 people, many children. All of this sounds familiar to Marco Rascón. He's kind of a legend in Mexico City. Some call him Super Barrio for this caped lucha libre superhero character he created after the earthquake in 1985, pushing for tenants' rights, the right to live in safe buildings. Rascón is older now, 64, and runs a seafood restaurant, and says he hopes this earthquake generates more change. He's encouraged by the rush of volunteers to help.
Era la misma sociedad otra vez.
He says society, the same people came out again. It's therapeutic to help clear the rubble, feel useful, instead of looking up at the sky and thinking, what next? And after we talk, he wants to show me something that gives him hope. He takes me to this big garden across the street, blocks of palm trees, ivy, a mini jungle in the city, beautiful. I'd walked by it before, but never gone inside. He tells me what was here before.
Estaban los edificios del multifamiliar Juárez que se derrumbaron.
An apartment complex fell here in the 1985 quake. More than 200 people died. The space was abandoned for decades, filled with rats, until it was reborn as this community garden. Tomatoes, chilies,
albahaca,
basil. And hours after the recent quake, it became a major donation center. It's been a month since the quake, and my partner, Eric, my baby boy, and I, we've been sharing a home with another displaced family. It's been really sweet to see the kids play together, but we miss our old home. I check in with Gabby Lujan, my neighbor from the beginning of the story, who left the city with her family. Gabby. ¿Cómo estás? Gabby feels more relaxed now, even though she's still in an earthquake zone in southern Mexico, Oaxaca. It got rocked by a quake last month, too. At least 100 people died. But Gabby says she feels safer. All the buildings are one story where she lives. No tall buildings falling down. She asks, what's our plan? We're moving to California, the Bay Area, another quake zone. I tell her how there was a big quake there in 1989.
Candy Maldonado with the hesitation.
Game 3 of the World Series. San Francisco Giants versus the Oakland A's.
Dave Parker at second base, so the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we're having an earthquake.
A magnitude 6.9 quake, strong enough to break the Bay Bridge. But that was 1989, a long time to get complacent, forget the fear. We're determined not to do that and keep asking the same questions in the U.S. as in Mexico. For the world, Monica Campbell, Mexico City.